Ulterior. Ulterior, 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 ulterior,
ulterior,
ulterior,
ulterior, ulterior.
Hello, planet Earth. I'm Eve. I was supposed to announce the release date of Bring Me the Horizon's latest album, Next Gen, but they're taking the absolute p***, so I just leaked it to the internet instead. But if I was you, I'd go listen to it now.
So like a cemetery.
Okay, so this episode is going to be done much differently than other episodes because this is a rollout for a record that was done much differently than anything else I've spoken about before. And it was important for me to go ahead and talk about this record for a multitude of reasons, some relating to the band itself and then the album, and then some because of the platform Ulterior and what it means to me and sort of, I guess, like my insight into why I listen to music the way that I do and why I score it the way that I do. There's going to be no like traditional intro or song clip or anything like that. You guys already kind of heard the intro and then the little snippet of this record that I'm discussing today. I don't know why I keep saying, or like beating around the bush in any way. We're here today to talk about Post-Human Next Gen, which is the brand new album out right now by Bring Me the Horizon. And this is very much so like beyond significantly special for myself because this is the very first time in the history of Ulterior that I get to review a brand new album by Bring Me the Horizon. You know, I started this platform back at the beginning of 2021, and since then, we have only had singles by Bring Me in anticipation of this new record. I'm gonna go ahead now and like kind of do my best to set the stage a little bit for what Next Gen is and how we got here in the first place. Bring Me the Horizon is the biggest band in the scene. They are the band that, whether you like them or you don't like them, they have shifted so much of what the scene stands for nowadays musically. They have influenced more bands than I can count on two hands. You know, so much of what the scene revolves around now is because of them and the efforts and the hard work that they put into their craft. And on a personal note, and I've never once tried to hide this bias from any of you guys, whether it be me talking on this microphone or talking to any of you guys out there, you know, on other platforms like Twitter or Instagram or Discord or wherever it might be, Bring Me is my favorite band of all time. And I have been confident in that for like the last decade plus now. When I think about like the like lineage of my favorite bands ever, it has gone Linkin Park and then Avenged Sevenfold and then Bring Me the Horizon. And in that echelon, like I have no doubt in my mind or my heart whatsoever about Bring Me the Horizon being my ultimate number one. They are, in my estimation, the greatest band of all time. They have amassed the greatest songs I've ever heard, the greatest albums I've ever heard. They have just, you know, been that fucking band in my head and my heart this entire time. And where the, I guess, lead up for Next Gen kind of begins would be their 2019 album, Amo. And every year on the anniversary of Amo, I have made it a point in some form or fashion to let you guys know that Amo is my favorite record of all time. There has never been a collection of songs that has meant more to my life and my hobbies and my passions the way that Amo has. And like, you know, musically, sonically, it was a huge fucking shift for Bring Me the Horizon to go from, you know, the like alternative rock and alt metal style of That's the Spirit into something that still had those elements with Amo, but it was much more experimental, much more rooted in like pop and electronic. And I gravitated towards that shit like right away. But at the same time, upon finishing Alma for the first time back in January of 2019, one of like the thoughts at the forefront of my head was, where do they go from here? What is next? Because I couldn't actually imagine them like sticking to that sound or like drifting even further into pop music away from metalcore and alt rock. And I kind of like, I don't want to say like I knew definitively, but I just had like this inkling that whatever they did next was kind of going to channel everything they have ever done throughout their careers. Like, we would, from that point on, get music that sounded like Amo, and That's the Spirit, and There Is a Hell, and Sepeternal, and maybe even Suicide Season and Count Your Blessings all at once. Where the timeline goes from there is Ludens in November of 2019. So Ludens was written for the soundtrack of the video game Death Stranding, and it also served as the lead single for whatever the next album by Bring Me the Horizon was going to be, or at least, you know, it was thought to be an album. But there was actually an interview with Ollie back around the time of Ludens' release where he said, you know, out loud to the public that he didn't know if Bring Me the Horizon would ever make another traditional album and instead favor the idea of like sporadic EPs and singles and just, you know, kind of like making this pathway for themselves to release new music whenever they felt like they had something to say to the world. And I think artistically that is very, very commendable, but it was also puzzling in a way because like I didn't really know what that looked like, you know, like having one Bring Me song like maybe every 3 months and then an EP and then a new song in 6 months and then a new song maybe 2 months later, and the idea that like all of these songs could sound very stylistically different from one another and, you know, there might not have been like a real pattern to the sounds of the band would be chasing, but whatever it was that they were going to do, like, I was, you know, I was tapped in, I was hooked, I was just so ready for this next iteration of Bring Me the Horizon. And then COVID happened, and as everybody remembers, the world shut down, didn't really know what was going to happen with the music scene, and like, you know, the touring industry going on hiatus for what ended up being like a year and some change. And what I remember about Bring Me in that time frame was they not only stayed busy in the studio, but they went ahead and allowed all of us to kind of look at the like behind the scenes process of whatever their next record was going to be through these like video diaries on YouTube and Instagram. And there are so many like really cool snippets that I can remember hearing off of those like video diaries. Like there's a, okay, so I posted this on my personal Twitter a couple days ago. There was like this one specific song that they were working on back then. It didn't have a name really, but I think the fan base went ahead and like dubbed it Pet Fox because in the writing or recording sessions, Ollie says, "I want a Pet Fox," for like maybe no real reason, but it just sounded funny. It fit the vibes. You know, that song, like it might never see the light of day, but like that fulfilled me. Like it's so weird to say, but like just being able to see and, you know, hear Bring Me the Horizon in the writing and recording process, it's one of my core memories of the pandemic, and like it really stuck with me. And then the first song that we ended up getting out of those sessions was Parasite Eve, and Parasite Eve ended up being a part of Post-Human Survival Horror, which came out in October of 2020. And to kind of go back to what I mentioned earlier about Bring Me dipping into so many of their like career arcs and genres that they've explored before, that's basically what ended up happening with Survival Horror, because, you know, we had songs like Dear Diary that felt like, you know, a mixture of like Suicide Season, Sempiternal, Teardrops, which felt like, you know, ripped out of That's the Spirit, One by One, which had like some Amo tendencies in its verses. Kingslayer, which is, in my opinion, maybe still like a top five most important song of the decade so far for the scene, because what Bring Me the Horizon and Baby Metal did on that song, it stuck with me. I know it stuck with all of you guys out there who have heard that song before and have fucked with that song before. And Survival Horror ended up being like this landmark release for Bring Me the Horizon, and it really showed that they do not have to confine themselves to one genre. And a big reason for that is because they have proven that whatever it is that they want to do stylistically with any sound that they desire, they're going to deliver on it to, you know, 1,010 fucking percent every single time. And there was a, and still is really, a bigger picture at play when it comes to the concept of post-human, because Survival Horror was meant to be the first part of a 4-EP series that would be concluded over the course of one calendar year. So from October of 2020 to October of 2021, the idea out of the camp of Bring Me the Horizon was to release one new EP seasonally, and each EP would explore a different sound that the band wanted to, you know, dive into, I guess. And, you know, I think I already mentioned, like, you know, bands can never promise us anything. Anybody in the music industry can never make promises. Yeah, that's the idea of, like, structuring four EPs for Post-Human is one of the reasons why I'm saying that nobody can make promises to us in the music field, because it is almost 4 years now since the original Post-Human, and now we only just now received the second installment of the Post-Human EP series, and it's not even a fucking EP series anymore, because Next Gen has 16 goddamn songs on it. And of those 16 songs, every single that has been released since Die For You in September of 2021, September 16th or 17th, to be exact, I believe, those singles are all present here. And I know some people might, you know, I don't want to say have an issue with it, but maybe they look at the track list for Next Gen and wonder why, you know, there's a handful of songs here that we had already heard before, and that kind of like, I guess takes away from the experience of having like a plethora of new songs, even though there are still new songs. I don't really fucking get it, man. I've never really understood the mentality of being big mad over getting a lot of singles and then those singles being on the album, but, you know, whatever, you rock how you want to rock. But back to my original point, so yeah, Die For You, Strangers, Lost, Amen, Dark Side, and Kool-Aid are all on Next Gen. And for myself personally, I really, really do not have any slightest bit of an issue with that fact, because it kind of like feels really cool to like finally have a full body of work where these songs are put into a larger context, and we can hear, you know, the transition from each song to another, like being able to now understand like how Utopia transitions into Kool-Aid and then so on. Like it feels, in a weird way, like rewarding to have, you know, gotten invested in all of these singles over the last couple of years, because now I understand where they fit into the context of Bring Me the Horizon on a larger scale than just being, you know, these headbanging and ass shaking singles. And before I get like too ahead of myself and just go into the songs here on Next Gen, I should very much so like backtrack and kind of go into the actual rollout for the album as far as a release date goes, because it ended up being kind of a mess, like, in all honesty. And it was nothing that I ever, like, took offense to or took personally, because, again, musicians can never really promise us anything. So even if Bring Me the Horizon initially had September 15th as the release date for Next Gen last year, that's always subject to change. Like, it's always, you know, something that can be maneuvered if a band just needs more time, or if they feel like something isn't quite ready or quite to their full liking. In the case of Bring Me the Horizon, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be like an insider on the band and all their happenings. I do not know why the album was constantly delayed. I do not know if Jordan Fish's eventual departure had any kind of a significant role in that. And I'm not even going to bother speculating on it because it doesn't really matter ultimately because we have the album now. And if I remember correctly, I think January 12th was like supposed to be the physical release of the record, and then September 15th would have been the digital, and then after January 12th came and went and there was like still no sign of the album's release or anything with that, I think people kind of understood like, we're just gonna get the album whenever we get it. Like, whenever the band decided that it was finished and ready to be put out, like, that's when we would hear it. And I was more than okay with waiting to hear the album because, like I've said so many times now, in my opinion, this is the greatest band of all time. And there is no sort of like a duration or a time constraint that you can put on greatness. And then last Thursday, which would have been May 23rd, around 7 a.m. Central Time over here, the band posted on social media a really, really fucking sick, like, PlayStation 1 style trailer for Next Gen, and it just looked amazing, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, damn, this is really cool. Like, visually, this is fucking awesome. And then at the very end of the trailer, it said, Posthuman Next Gen, new album, out at midnight, 5:24. And I was like, oh. Okay. So, that's it. The wait is over. Album's out. In how many hours is from 7 to 12 midnight? 17? I'm bad at math. Whatever fucking amount of hours it was, like, having, like, that time to be like, oh, shit, okay, so I'm gonna be hearing this album, you know, that time from now. I'm going to be reviewing it in about a week, and holy shit, this is happening. This is fucking awesome. I guess having that little time to prepare for it just kind of made me go into like a mindset of like, okay, this is happening. Let me go ahead and run back through all of these singles a couple times to, at the very least, kind of like be, you know, in the proper headspace that I believe is necessary for myself to experience new Bring Me the Horizon, because new Bring Me the Horizon is always like, it's almost ritualistic for me. At the same time, it made me understand like anything else coming out tomorrow, which would have been Friday, May 24th, is just going to be put on the back burner. And it's, you know, at no like fault or discredit to any of the other bands or artists. It's just because Bring Me the Horizon is my favorite band of all time, and no matter what it is in any scenario, they will always have priority. And so I knew like 21 Pilots, Capstan, Lost Trees, any band with an album was going to kind of like, at least for the time being, like be pushed out of my peripheral. Bands with singles like Honey Revenge, like it just wasn't going to happen, at least like that immediately anymore, because now the entire focus was shifted to Bring Me the Horizon. May 24th became Next Gen Day, and I know it wasn't just for myself, because I saw so many people on the timeline, good and bad, expressing opinions about this record, but, you know, no matter what it was, no matter what side of the argument that you were on, you listened, you talked. You gave your attention to Bring Me the Horizon because they are the band that commands attention like nobody else in the scene right now. And yes, we see Bad Omens and Sleep Token and Spirit Box getting there. But until you are at the level of Bring Me the Horizon, there is nothing that can compare to the conversation piece that they become and the way that the entire scene revolves around them whenever it is their time to fucking shine. And god damn it, motherfucker, was this not their fucking time to shine? Okay. This is the greatest album I've ever reviewed on this podcast. Like, full on, fucking, shirt off, running around the room, screaming like a fucking idiot. This is real hoops. This is real music. This is real shit. This is Bring Me the Fucking Horizon. And it was never going to be anything else. It was never going to be any different. My reaction to Next Gen was never going to be anything short of me just not knowing how to fucking act or behave. And truthfully, I didn't know how to, you know, like function or have any sort of like true cognition in the opening seconds of this record, because it starts off with OST Dream Seeker, which is an interlude, and there are a couple of other songs here that are like kind of classified as interlude by that OST labeling. I'll get to them later on, but Dream Seeker, more than anything else, it kind of just like sets the stage for Utopia, which I would say is like the actual opening track of Next Gen. That guitar riff is really like the first thing that you hear upon starting the record, and then from there you get this song that feels very like, I don't want to call it like post-hardcore or emo driven, but it's definitely like Bring Me's nod to that genre and bands along those lines who kind of like paved the way for this kind of music. One of the things that I really like about Utopia and its delivery is these different elements that kind of are a bit antithetical in some ways to the progression of the song, because the song for the most part is like very, I was gonna say mellow, but it's not mellow. It's more like soothing and calming in a weird way. You have this bit in the, like the build up to the first chorus, which is like built upon this classical guitar, and hearing like those nylon strings kind of like be this serenading note of sorts to the listener. I think that did like a really good job at kind of showing the varying like panels and levels to what it is that Utopia would be doing, and then at large what Next Gen would be doing. I think Utopia kind of like starts to like disintegrate in a way towards the end of the song's runtime, and it becomes this controlled chaos situation where you have something like a blast beat in the drumming for the outro section of this song, but like no other actual part of the instrumentation is getting crazier or heavier, nor is Ollie's voice. It's just like this really like somehow a subdued yet heavy section of Utopia that I thought was just like really like marvelous in so many ways. From there, Utopia bleeds into Kool-Aid, and kind of going back to one of my earlier points on this episode about getting to hear the singles in the context of the album, just understanding how Utopia goes into Kool-Aid, like it kind of, it made me appreciate Kool-Aid a little bit more, I guess. Not that I've never appreciated it. I truthfully did look at it as like the weakest of the singles, and coming out of Next Gen, I am still of that mindset, but understand that when I say Kool-Aid is the weakest of the singles, I am saying that Kool-Aid is a perfect song that I happen to think is not as good or better than a collection of other perfect songs, and that's kind of where I've always viewed Bring Me at, like where I think that their floor is the ceiling for so many other bands, and I think Kool-Aid is a great example of why I believe that's the case. And ultimately, Kool-Aid is still just a tremendous fucking song, and again, the context added by Next Gen, I do think it elevated it a lot for myself. Top 10 Statues That Cried Blood. So out of every new song that was present on Next Gen that we didn't get to hear as a single beforehand at any time over the last 3 years, Top 10 Statues That Cried Blood is truthfully my favorite of that bunch, and I'm like having this internal debate right now about whether I think Top 10 Statues is just overall the best song on Next Gen. I remember there was a, so I'm going to mention this later on when talking about another song, but I think it was the first date of the Next Gen tour with Bad Omens back in January. There was a bit where Ollie and like the computerized Siri voice that you hear sometimes on this record, Eve, they were like previewing a couple seconds of some of the new songs, and Top 10 Statues That Cried Blood was one of the songs previewed. And just from that little snippet of the chorus, I was like, yo, that fucking song, whatever that song is, whatever Top 10 Statues That Cried Blood is, like, I want that shit, I need that shit. And then getting to hear just how well fleshed out it is on this record, and how it's so, like, so take what I said about Utopia being, like, a nod to, like, emo and post-hardcore, you get that in fucking spades on top 10 statues. It is one of the catchiest courses that Bring Me has ever written. It is one of the like most smoothly progressing songs I think they've had in their discography over the last like 5 years and last decade and any other time frame like that. Top 10 statues that cried blood is like maybe the pinnacle of this record, and maybe also like one of the pinnacles of Bring Me's entire career and their abilities as songwriters. Like, I feel like I can count on maybe one hand the amount of times in recent memory that I've heard a new song by Bring Me that has made me feel the way that Top 10 Statues did. It's just like somehow so bubbly and energetic while still being, you know, relatively heavy for what this EP or this album is going for. And I can't tell you the amount of times that I've heard this song over the last few days because I don't fucking know myself. The next song after that is Limousine. There are like two different main responses to Limousine that I've seen over the last few days that this record has been available to all of us. One of those responses is much more positive in its like in its cadence, I guess, where people are hearing this song and they're like, oh shit, this has like Deftones vibes, like this isn't really like anything that Bring Me has done before. And I would say, yeah, that's true. It's pretty unique in like where it fits into the discography of Bring Me the Horizon, and it definitely does have like those Deftones vibes, as so many people have pointed out by now. The other side of the response is that this song sounds very eerily and maybe uncomfortably similar to Sync.Wave by Moodring. And this isn't like a new topic, because there was a, I don't remember how it was done, whether it was like an Instagram short or not Instagram short, like a Instagram reel or a story, or again, I don't remember the format that it was previewed as, but we did hear a snippet of this song a couple of weeks ago now, and from just those couple seconds, I picked up on the Sync.Wave sound, and so many others online did, including Hunter, who is the vocalist of Moodring, and he had the kind of response that you would expect out of somebody who, you know, is the frontman of a smaller band, and then suddenly a song of his is suddenly done by a band on this scale of Bring Me the Horizon. And, you know, to Hunter's defense, I understand that mindset. I 100% do. And anybody who has, you know, like taken like some kind of a negative stance about Limousine because of the similarities to Sync.Wave, I get it. I do still think that there are some areas of this song that are unique to Bring Me's delivery on it, and especially the feature from Aurora. I thought Aurora did an amazing job in her section, and it's definitely complimentary to the tone that Ollie has throughout this song that, again, is inspired by Deftones and, as we've seen now, Moodring. I will say, to be truthful with you guys, I'm not really in the camp of people who are upset about this song. Do I think it's, again, eerily similar to Sync.Wave? Yeah. I don't see how you could have heard both songs by now and not be of that mindset. At the same time, I think that as long as this song has been able to kind of direct people to Sync.Wave to hear what it sounds like when done by, you know, the original band that did it, Moodring, I think that's a win for Moodring, and I think that's a win for the people who champion that band, such as myself. So, you know, if nothing else, I would hope that Limousine has been able to have that effect. A bullet with my name on, there are like a lot of different avenues I can start off with this song, but the one that I want to go into is, if you guys remember, it wasn't that long ago where Bring Me was having like a different, like a visual poster of sorts for the tour that they were doing overseas and like listing like the set times for each band and artist on the bill. And there was one particular day where the header for their poster on social media said, "If Jesus Christ returns, we'll kill that fucker 2 times. And it got a lot of fucking people talking. A lot of very upset people on the side of, you know, like Christianity and, you know, belief in Jesus and God and all that. And, you know, this isn't a piece that I want to make about religion because, you know, everybody has their beliefs and their backgrounds and I want to be respectful to all sides. But at the same time, in my head, it's like, how did you go this long listening to Bring Me the Horizon or being aware of the band and their themes and visuals and all that stuff? And not once maybe think like, hey, you know, this band has like, you know, atheist perspectives and like anti-religious lyrics and imagery in what they do, you know. And the reason why I mentioned that whole debacle now is because A Bullet With My Name On turned out to be the song that has that header as a lyric here. If Jesus Christ returns, we'll kill that fucker 2. And guess what? It's not even Ollie who says it. It's Spencer from Under Oath. Spencer, who, like, you know, very famously used to be a Christian himself, used to, or he still fronts Under Oath, but I was gonna say Under Oath used to be a very Christian band with a lot of Christian lyrics and Christian imagery. And then he and the rest of Under Oath, you know, kind of turned against the religion in recent years, and now Spencer, of all people, is the one saying, if Jesus Christ returns, we'll kill that fucker 2, and you know what? I hope Melanie Mack heard that lyric in this song. I hope anybody who is so up in arms about that fucking stupid controversy, that stupid-ass debacle, got to listen to the song and be pissed off all over again, not just because they are now having their innocent little fucking ears be pierced by this lyric, but also understand it was a lyric attached to a fucking amazing song and one of the best on Next Gen. And, you know, I've already repeated over and over again, like, the catchiness and the hooks and the chorus on this album are just so goddamn infectious and top tier to the highest extent, and A Bullet With My Name On is no difference. And the collaboration between Bring Me the Horizon and Under Oath in this instance, it just made all of the sense in the world, considering that A Bullet With My Name On very much so, like, continues that trajectory of Next Gen having a lot of emo themes, both sonically and lyrically. There's this, another OST song after that. It is Spiritual, and I'll go ahead and lump this in with the other OST song later on called Pussy, which is, like, spelled very weirdly, P-U-S-S/E. It's cleverly done. I think so, at least. And the reason why I felt like I was able to give Spiritual and Pussy, you know, actual scores as opposed to Dream Seeker, which I kind of just went like an NA rating on because I don't think it can be rated, is because when it came to, okay, so let me backtrack a little bit. I think Bring Me have always been able to take interlude sounding songs and make them feel integral to the, like, delivery of the EP or the album or whatever it is that they're doing. And I really do believe that is a characteristic of the band that you can trace all the way back to 15 Fathoms Counting off of Count Your Blessings back in 2006. So, you know, this is like an 18-year thing, in my opinion, because that's just an acoustic instrumental song that is kind of antithetical to the way that the rest of that album is constructed. But again, I felt like it was done so well that it feels like a natural part of Count Your Blessings. The same way that I look at Amo, and I feel like if you take out songs like Ouch and Fresh Bruises and I Apologize If You Feel Something, the album loses a lot of its steam and aura, because those songs are very much so like connective threads to the entire album around it, especially Ouch. I really do believe Ouch is one of the best songs ever made by Bring Me the Horizon, and to some people out there, it's just an interlude. And to circle back to Next Gen, even though Spiritual and Pussy are, you know, just these like electronic bits that sound like, you know, production samples that might have been left over from other writing sessions, I still feel like they're able to connect the like middle and later portions of this album to each other in a way that makes it feel necessary to have these interludes be included and to credit them as their own songs and not just these little bridges of music. N.A. So I mentioned earlier that during the first date of the Next Gen tour that Bring Me kind of like played samples of some of the songs on this record that were unreleased at the time. That was done as a bit to lead into what Ollie was really trying to do, which was record group vocals with the members of the audience at that show. And we didn't know it at the time that it was for NA. We just knew that it was for some song that would be on Next Gen. But the section that Ollie had the crowd record was them saying, "Hello, Ollie, you fucking knobhead." And when I heard that group vocal section appear on NA, it was like, this might be weird to say, but it felt like this triumphant moment in a way where it's like, imagine if you were there at that show and you're a part of this recording and maybe you think like, oh, you know, maybe it gets used, maybe it doesn't, who knows? And then you actually hear yourself on this record. I can't imagine what that feels like. And then from there, NA acts as one of the most stylistically different songs on this record. And I also can't really think of another song in the past by Bring Me the Horizon where this song I feel is comparable to. NA really like stands out and stands above as its own identity and its own entity. And I think that's able to allow this song to flourish in a way that, you know, as much as I love A Bullet With My Name On and Top 10 Statues, somebody saying NA is their favorite song on the album because of how different it is, I feel like it's a credible argument that you can't really debate against. It's just like so very 90s in its delivery, and I fucking love when Bring Me dip into that bag. R.I.P. So there are a lot of levels and layers to this album that I think I don't want to say they're like directly influenced by hyperpop, but I do feel like Bring Me and Ollie specifically looked at hyperpop and might have thought, okay, how can we integrate the concept of what this genre does into what it is that we already do? And you do hear that in glimpses when it comes to songs like Lost and Top 10 Statues, but when it comes to R.I.P. and how this song is mapped out, it's a lot more obvious here than on any other song, because R.I.P. is just like so over the top in how it's done. This might be like a weird comparison to some of you guys out there, maybe all of you out there listening, but R.I.P., okay, not in terms of sound or even concept, but just in terms of like how it stacks up to the rest of the album, it reminds me of Kingslayer off of Survival Horror, because Kingslayer was just like so out there in comparison to Teardrops and Obey and One by One, and I feel like R.I.P. does that as well. I don't think it's as good as Kingslayer, and I also, you know, wouldn't compare it sonically to Kingslayer at all, but just try to understand what I'm saying, that it's like you're taking the ideas of some of these other songs and you're just like injecting steroids into it. That's what I would say R.I.P. feels like. And then the final new song on this album, which also happens to serve as the closer to it, is Dig It. And Dig It runs for 7 minutes and 12 seconds, and in that duration, it's just like any idea that Bring Me the Horizon had left that they hadn't really gotten to yet was put into Dig It. And to the credit of the band, it doesn't feel like overcapacitated or discombobulated in any way, despite how many crazy and fucking wacky ideas were meshed into this one song. It still feels cohesive. It doesn't matter if the song, you know, has like this drum and bass thing going for it, or like an EDM thing, or later on, you know, feeling like a full-blown metalcore song. It's able to be like constructed in a way that allows the flow to like leave the listener with this very strong lasting impression and a great closing note on an album that I cannot imagine you didn't have like at least somewhat close to an out-of-body experience hearing. And then there is this very, very long pause towards the end of Dig It, and I'm sitting there hearing that pause and I'm just thinking like, okay, what's gonna happen? Like, is there going to be a jump scare? Is it just going to go back to how the song was initially? Like, what is this pause for? And like, what am I really waiting to hear? And then at the end of the song, you hear the voice of M8, who is asking for the listener to boot her in safe mode because she encountered a fatal error. Whatever that is supposed to mean cryptically, I'm locked in, man. Like, I'm all in on this Bring Me the Horizon shit the same way that, you know, I have been ever since I was 13, 14 years old, however old I actually was at the time in the late 2008. And just like, you know, being able to like see this band grow up and in so many ways grow up alongside them and just kind of like, I'm pretty sure that I've explained this in some capacity before, but like one of the reasons why I feel like so connected at the hip to Bring Me the Horizon is because it just felt like their music evolved and constantly matched whatever it is that I really, really wanted to hear at the time. Like when Suicide Season dropped in 2008, that's exactly the kind of music that I wanted to be hearing, you know, that really like heavy and unabashedly unapologetic metalcore that kind of borders deathcore. That's really what I wanted. And when There Is a Hell came out, it kind of became a little bit experimental and some of its electronic stuff. And again, I was like, you know, finding dubstep and EDM at that time in 2010. And so combining those elements, that's really what I wanted to hear. Sepeternal, I needed something that was like kind of challenging to the idea of modern metalcore at the time. That's a spirit. I needed something that was a lot more rooted in just like regular alt rock. Amo in 2019, I needed something that was like so pop infused while still being able to retain all of the elements of Bring Me the Horizon that I fell in love with 11 years prior. Survival horror, I needed at the time the band to, you know, kind of experiment with everything that got them to that point and decide for themselves, like, hey, you know, we can be a metalcore band while still being an alt-rock band, while still channeling elements of pop and EDM and whatever the fuck it is that we want to do. And then now with Next Gen, this is everything that I want out of this band right now. You know, this like nod to emo music while being able to, in some ways, in my opinion, revolutionize the genre in fucking big 2024. That's what I needed more than anything else. And I always say in all of my reviews on social media and at the end of every episode, for the love of the game, and there is no album I have ever reviewed that I believe embodies the idea of doing something and taking risks and taking challenges for the love of everything that we love the way that Bring Me the Horizon have. And so since I just mentioned the social media reviews, that now brings me to what I would imagine is going to be my like closing point, or at least it's going to segue into whatever my closing point ends up being. So I posted the review on Instagram and Twitter last Friday for Next Gen, and the way that my reviews on social media works is I always grade everything on a scale of 10, at least for records. And the score that I gave Next Gen was an 11 out of 10. And I'm going to kind of give a little bit of insight into like why I did that and, you know, what that means for the scale moving forward. So the idea of like breaking my own scale, I always imagined that that would happen one day. There are two specific things that influence the idea of the scale someday breaking. I'll explain the first one and then get into the second one. So I think some of you guys out there know that I am a fan of professional wrestling, and I'm not gonna like go into like deep lore or anything like that, but in that field, there is somebody named Dave Meltzer who is a like a wrestling critic and a wrestling journalist, and he reviews matches on a scale of 5. But he will sometimes go beyond 5 and do like 5.5, 5.75, 6, 6.25. The highest he's ever gone is 7. And I didn't like purposely model my scale after that, but I've always thought like, you know, this scale isn't something that I am married to or something that anybody is ever married to when it comes to making their own scales about whatever it is that they're reviewing. And so because I would constantly see the scale be broken in that area, I always knew it was possible for it to happen in my area. The second thing that inspired the idea of breaking the scale, and this is like maybe a bit more of a stretch than like a 5-star scale or whatever the fuck. So do you guys know the Ace Attorney video game series with like Phoenix Wright and Apollo Justice? So in those video games, there is something that you can like pull up from whoever you're interrogating, and they're called psych locks. And up to 5 psych locks appear on the screen, and the number of psych locks that show up would indicate like the determination of somebody to keep their secret from Phoenix Wright. And for the duration of the original Phoenix Wright trilogy, we were always under the assumption that 5 psych locks was the max. And then in Apollo Justice Ace Attorney, we learn that somebody can have black psych locks. And black psych locks means that somebody has like this secret that even they are keeping subconsciously and they don't even know it when they're being interrogated. So in a way, showing us the black psych locks broke any illusion that we had that 5 psych locks was the max. And suddenly there was this new level that would not be seen in the series often, but it's there. It's always a possibility of running into somebody with black psych locks. And again, that has kind of always been like an inspiration for the idea that one day Ulterior's scale would be broken. And in the same way that the black Cyclops do not show up often at all, the 11 out of 10 rating is going to be incredibly rare. You guys, I know for a fact you will not see that again for a long time. And I was very, very, very comfortable with having Next Gen be the record that finally broke the scale. Because in my head, I thought, if this isn't the album that I do this for, it's never going to happen. Because like I said earlier, in my opinion, this is the best album I have ever reviewed on this show. For the 3 years that I've been doing Ulterior, there is no album that I have enjoyed more than Next Gen. And I wanted to not only commemorate that, but also cement it with the 11 out of 10 rating. And it's not a record that I'm going to be letting go anytime soon. Like, it has been a daily occurrence ever since last Friday of me just starting the album off of OST Dream Seeker and just going through the entire thing and just kind of like, you know, reliving that first experience of being like, holy shit, top 10 statues, holy shit, NA, holy shit, Lost Strangers, Amen, Die For You. Like, that experience of being able to kind of relive these singles all over again and have them be as special to me right now as they've ever been. And maybe in some cases, these songs now mean more to me, having the full package of what they're attached to, than ever before. That's the power of Next Gen. That's the power of Bring Me the Horizon. And it's a big deal to me to be able to have finally reviewed a full record by this band on this show, because this show does not happen without them. And I can't say that I am into music because of Bring Me the Horizon, nor can I say that I love music because of them, but I can say that I have, you know, long ago made the choice to pursue music media in some fashion because of them. Because after hearing Amo back in 2019, I just thought, like, there's no conceivable way for me to live my life without being involved in this. There is no way that I will ever have satisfaction without, you know, trying to, like, find a place in music. As cheesy and cringy as all that might sound, that's really what Bring Me has done for me. That's the effect that they have had on my life. And no matter what it is that they do for the rest of their careers, I'm always going to be right there. And they have done more for me than I can ever express to you guys, or, you know, even them someday. And this is really as much as I can do, you know, sitting here for 45 minutes now or whatever it is, talking about this fucking album and what it meant to me and what it made me feel. So, you know, I really do hope that all of my rambling made sense in some way. You know, I hope you guys have been able to enjoy this record the way that I have. And just, you know, even if it wasn't this record, I hope that you guys have in the past heard before something from any band that has made you feel the way that this album did for me. And that's really, you know, where I'm going to wrap this up. That's my take on Next Gen and everything that got us here, and whatever is going to get us to the next phase of Posthuman, I'm going to be right here to talk about it with as much heart and passion as I can possibly exude. Because again, I want to give back to this band in whatever way I can after everything that they've been able to do for me. Thank you so much for listening, you guys. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, for the love of the game, let's make a scene. Thank you.